This is the You Can Learn Chinese podcast. For everyone who's trying to learn Chinese or reaching for the next level, you came to the right place. I am your host, Jared Turner, and my wife says, I never listen to her, or something like that. My co-host is John Passon, who's out for this episode. But what really makes his blood boil are faulty spacesuits. In this episode, a clueless American white guy shocks a podcast host with perfect Chinese using one trick that teachers hate. My guest is none other than Ari Smith, better known as YouTuber Xiaoma. In this light and engaging interview, we dig into how he got started with Chinese and how he turned almost by happenstance into a YouTube sensation. Here's Ari in his own words.
My name is Xiaoma. Or as some people call me on the internet, Xiao Man, just because they misread my YouTube handle, which is Xiaoma NYC. But my real name is Ari, and I am a content creator and also a language businessman as well.
Great. Why did you start learning Chinese?
Well, I started learning Chinese because of an advertisement in the New York Times for a free Chinese class for high school students. And so I was graduating college. I was graduating high school. I don't have an idea of what I wanted to do, but I saw this ad for a free summer class and I thought to myself, hey, that'd be pretty cool, you know?
Well, I'm curious, you know, okay, there's a lot of things you could have done with your summer. Yeah. And most people, when they think of summer, they're not sitting in a class and I'm not so interested in that. Well, why did you jump at this one? I mean, hey, you get back to class.
That's a good question. And the answer is that I'd always liked learning language. I mean, in high school, I had studied Latin and ancient Greek and Hebrew, and like I enjoyed studying them, but they were not languages that you could, well, I mean, in the case of Hebrew, yes, it is a spoken language, but I studied them more as written languages, but I always wanted to try myself with something that was actually a spoken language that I could learn to speak. And when I saw this ad, I just thought it was an exciting opportunity to go and like learn a real language. And with Chinese, for me, the other thing was, you know, it just seemed like exotic. It seemed different. Mm-hmm. It seemed like it just plain cool. You know, it just seemed so mysterious. It seemed like, see those Chinese characters and I'd be like, what, like, what's going on there? You know, what is that?
Looks like and I was animals.
I was so curious. I was like, what? I mean, I had been to Chinatown, you know, in New York, and it seemed interesting to me. But the thing that I would say I had a special affinity to, if there was any affinity, was just like the characters, you know, and the writing system was so attractive to me. And it seemed very interesting and abstract. And I thought, hey, like something cool to study there.
Well, tell me about this class. I mean, there's not often you see things out there for, oh, free Chinese class.
Yeah.
Who was it sponsored by? And what was that like, you know, stepping in that first class and that experience when you started studying?
So this was actually sponsored by the U.S. government. They have a StarTalk program.
Oh,
which
yeah.
Basically, so the idea of it was to get Americans to learn languages that are critical to national security was the idea, right? Mm-hmm. So they had sponsored free classes for Chinese and Arabic and a few other languages. And I don't know. I think it worked out for them, to be honest. Like they definitely got a lot of Americans interested in learning Chinese through me.
Definitely.
But I just thought it was cool, you know, to do it. And like that summer, it was me. And it was honestly just mostly other ABCs, you know, American Board Chinese for the most part. I just remember being fascinated by it the first time I stepped into the classroom, you know, just seeing the characters there. And it was so mysterious and so interesting. And I remember getting a notebook, just like a blank notebook to practice characters in. And I would just sit in my room for hours after class, just like practicing, just writing down the characters over and over again. Like, they just looked so cool to me. I was like, man, this is a language like you could actually learn. Like, you know, it was cool. It was cool. And then I tried to tease out the philosophy behind it, you know, got into Chinese philosophy for a little bit. And it seemed really interesting to me. It was just very something that I wasn't used to. So it was exciting.
Well, you know, I know as well, like a lot of people, they might, you know, spend some time learning a language like that, but you've taken things quite a bit further, you know, in your life. What are some of the things that you did that you think really helped you increase your proficiency? Perhaps, like, if you hadn't have done this, maybe you really wouldn't have, you know, developed a lot more, you know, proficiency in the language. But like, maybe you could talk about that a little bit.
Yeah. So with Chinese, I was a fairly average language learner until this one weird trick happened to me.
It sounds like clickbait right here. One weird trick that teachers hate.
You know, what's interesting, like I've learned to, like having been a YouTuber for so long, I kind of will clickbait my own sentences sometimes. But what happened was after that first summer, you know, I liked it and I really enjoyed it. And so I went on to college and I did standard Chinese 101 thing. And like, you know, I was good at it. Mm-hmm. I wasn't, you know, anything phenomenal, but I was good at it and I enjoyed it. But then what happened was that the summer after that, I went to this program in China called Princeton in Beijing, which was a class at Beishuda, which is Beijing Normal University, where they will send you to go to this program to learn Chinese in an immersion format. And so what Princeton in Beijing is, it's American college students, a class of like 60 to 100 American college students, where they force you to sign a language pledge. And the idea is that if you speak English anytime during the program, you get kicked out. And they've enforced this pledge before, right? Including, by the way, with the other American college students in the program.
Yeah.
And so I'm going to this program, like all of a sudden thrown into the deep end, being forced to speak Chinese with only a year of college Chinese under my belt.
Wow. You got to tell me about what was this like?
Yeah, I mean, it was wild. It was like so cool for me. Like that was just like hitting my head with a baseball bat of language and Chinese characters. And it also, like, I mean that in more ways than one. Like, it was such a powerful experience, both in terms of learning Chinese, but also in terms of how to learn a language. Like, I all of a sudden realized, oh, this is why I was so bad at learning languages for so long. Is because we weren't actually speaking. Mm-hmm. And like when that clicked for me, I was like, oh, okay. So now I'm going to actually get good at learning language. And I started to get really good. Like the other college students from Princeton University, I didn't go to Princeton, but these other kids were all from, you know, like supposedly the smartest kids in the world, right? Mm-hmm. And they're all like looking at me and being like, hey, dude, why is your Chinese so good? Like they were all confused, you know? But for me, it made so much sense because up till that point, like I had just been learning languages with like the wrong methods. And all of a sudden it's like giving like candy to a baby, like to a 2-year-old for the first time in his life. And it's like, oh, wow. Like this is really good. You know, I just took to it very naturally. Mm-hmm. You know, it was just total immersion and speaking. And after that summer, I spent a whole year in China at another university in Beijing. Mm-hmm. And I got even better at Chinese during that year. You know, and I tried to use the same methods that I had learned from that program. So I tried to not have any American friends, you know, only hang out with Chinese people. And I took it even farther. I was influenced by this guy. I don't know if you've heard of a website called All Japanese All the Time.
Yeah.
But it was huge. It was like this guy, this 18-year-old who from Utah, who taught himself Japanese to fluency in 18 months and then flew to Japan and got a job working as a software engineer at a Japanese company in Japanese.
Wow.
Right. And he just self-taught himself Japanese from his mother's basement. And his advice was all like, you know, immersion and like all Japanese all the time, right? As the title of the website went. So I tried to combine that with what I had learned from the Princeton in Beijing into my own all Chinese all the time method. And I threw out all my English language music. I only listened to music in Chinese. I was doing like hundreds of Anki reps per day. I was doing 50 new Anki reps per day for a year.
Wow.
I had 500 Anki reps per day at the peak. And so I was spending like 1 to 2 hours on Anki every day. If you don't know what Anki is, it's like a flashcard. It's like a flashcard program for the listeners.
You're like ODing on Anki there.
No, I was ODing on Anki. I was going totally crazy on Anki. Like the first thing I would do when I woke up in the morning was I would turn on the TV, which was Chinese news, like CCTV 9 or CCTV 4, I forget which one. You know, and then I would like write down the phrases that I learned from CCTV, like, and you know, I still remember and like put those all into my Anki and just like memorize everything. And I put like historical facts into my Anki too. So plus like 6 hours, 8 hours of Chinese class per day, you know, plus hanging out with Chinese people for fun at night. Or if they weren't Chinese, they would be like Japanese or Tajik, you know, people from countries that don't speak English. And so I just hang out with them and we don't speak Chinese together. And
that's amazing.
Yeah. Oh yeah. The other thing I did was I'd go outside just walking around. Mm-hmm. I would be listening to MP3s. Like there would be no silence in my life. I would just be listening to MP3s of Chinese all the time, wherever I was, guaranteed. So, yeah.
I'm curious to know, do you have any like stories or experiences where it was like, wow, this is really clicking, or like, you know, you realize the progress you've made?
Yeah, ordering in restaurants is always really cool. Like I started to be able to order successfully in the Chinese cafeteria, you know, at our Chinese university. And that was so exciting for me because all of a sudden I could just kind of get whatever I want. I felt very independent in language. And it was very exciting to combine the food with language because it's a very positive feedback loop. You know, like when you learn how to ask for Hong Shao Rou in Chinese, which is like Chinese civilization's greatest contributions to mankind, in my opinion.
It's amazing.
You know, right. You know, but once you learn how to order that, it's great because now you can learn the language, but then immediately like be able to eat this delicious food. And so that was really cool. And then obviously, I mean, like being able to have go on a date in Chinese.
That's
wonderful, right? Like when you can have a girlfriend and the whole thing be in Chinese, I mean, it's the positive feedback loop, right? Because you're like, you're living your life in another country. You know, you got to get good at it, right? And you have to, like, in order to do these things in your life, you have to speak Chinese. There's no way around it, right? So you're kind of thrown to the deep end and you have to do it. And I'm not one who believes that you have to live in China to get good at Chinese, but it certainly helps. It helps.
Absolutely. That's really cool. So what was the total amount of time then you spent living in China during this period?
1 year.
Oh, that's it?
Yeah.
That's pretty cool. So you came back. You got to tell me then, how did you get into start making some of these YouTube videos that you're doing now?
So while I was in China, I was on TV and radio a bunch. In China, they have these televised Chinese competitions where foreigners from all around the world will dress up in their ethnic costume, which always posed a difficulty to us Americans because like, what do we wear, you know? So it's like, I don't know, like a cowboy hat maybe with some ripped jeans. I don't know.
Kind of like a spectacle, you know?
Yeah, right. So I did these competitions there in Chinese and that was fun. To be honest, I was never really good at it because I actually always had terrible stage fright. Like I was good at Chinese, but I was bad at the competitions. I was too nervous, too anxious, but I did enjoy performing. You know, I enjoyed using language. I enjoyed being on camera. And so when I got back to America, I had heard about this cool new thing called YouTube. This was back in 2011. So I decided to try making some YouTube videos, me speaking Chinese. And I remember the first video that I went a little bit viral. It got like 700K views, you know, which for me at the time was a lot.
Yeah.
That was the first video I ever uploaded to YouTube. And like, I had friends from my college messaging me being like, dude, I saw you on YouTube speaking Chinese. That's really cool. And so it was exciting for me to do that. And so then over the next few years, you know, I posted these videos from time to time and most of them wouldn't go viral. In fact, most of them wouldn't really get any views at all, but it was just fun for me. You know, it's something I did in my free time and I had a full-time job. You know, I worked in finance for a few years and then I worked in software for a few years. I would just be doing these YouTube videos on the side, posting on YouTube, but then also eventually posting on this Chinese website called Bilibili.
Oh yeah.
And then in 2018, I decided to quit my job and try doing videos full time.
Wow. How was that transition for you?
Well, at first it didn't go so well. I mean, I was working like a maniac. I was posting a video a day for the first like several months. And then for the first year, I was posting still multiple videos per week, but it wasn't working. Like, I mean, some of the videos would occasionally go viral in China or in and other countries too. Like maybe they would go viral in the Philippines or India, but I wasn't making enough money to support myself living in New York City and probably most places in America. You know, I was making below, right, especially New York City. Yeah. So I, you know, I was making below the federal poverty rate. So I was on Medicaid and I was like, why am I working so hard for no reward? And occasionally the videos would go viral, but it just wasn't, I couldn't do it. So I was like, all right, I'm just going to go back to software. Right. So like a year and a half in, I was like, that's the end of my experiment. And so I started prepping for jobs back in software engineer and I was studying for coding interviews and all that stuff. And then like, I decided to try like one last video. You know, I went out with my friend filming and it was just like a kind of like a vlog of me like buying groceries in Chinatown and we filmed it. And I was like, man, this video is so stupid. Like who's going to watch this dumb piece of shit, like buying grocery, like vegetables in Chinatown? Like why would anyone care about this? You know, and my friend, like, it was so boring to me. And my friend was like, you know what? Just post it, whatever, man. You're just like trying these things. Like, why not post it? So I was like, all right, fine, I'll post it. You know, and anyway, so I was like, still while brushing up with software, I was like, I posted it. And then, you know, it flops as I expected. All right, dumb video. And then like a week goes by and I'm like checking my phone. And I see the video has 100,000 views. I'm like, oh, that's interesting. You know, yeah. I haven't had a video get 100,000 views in a while. I think that's pretty cool. A couple of weeks go by. I'm like, it's like 500,000 views. I'm like, whoa, what? That's weird.
Yeah.
Then like another week goes by. It's at 1 million views.
Wow.
I'm like, whoa, this is really strange. And then I look at the comments and they're all in English. Like Americans like watching me buy like bok choy in Chinatown?
Wait a second. So what I'm gathering here though is that what you're saying before that all your videos were targeted towards Chinese speaking people, Chinese speaking natives, right?
And now
now you have my videos, non-native speakers of Chinese who are watching your videos in Chinese. Is that right?
Yeah. I mean, up until that moment, like the vast majority of my videos had been viewed by mostly by Chinese people in China.
And occasionally
they would go viral, but they would all go viral in China and didn't make any money. So I was like, all right, it doesn't matter if it goes viral in China because I can't make a career out of this. Sorry.
Yeah.
So, but this video was going viral in America. Mm. And when you go viral in America, like you could actually start to make some money. I was looking at this and I was like, that's cool. But also I was kind of confused because I was like, why are Americans watching this? You know, because for me, it was so strange because like this was the most boring, ordinary thing to me. And so I never tried making this type of video because like, it was just like dumb. Mm. Like I was like, this is so boring and ordinary. But what I realized was that to Americans, it was fascinating to see a white guy buying groceries in fluent Chinese. Like that was interesting, you know, to people. It was funny and cool and heartwarming. And so I tried doing some more of these videos. I made one where I went into a nail salon and started getting my nails done.
Manicure.
I'm just like a white guy in a Chinese nail salon having my nails done. And then I start speaking to her in Chinese and she's totally shocked. And then I post this video. And the first day, like I was doing some photo shoot with my friend and then we're in the car together. And he's like, dude, do you know that video you posted this morning has 8 million views right now?
What?
Oh, and I'm like, what? 8 million views? And so then I started 2 and 2 together and being like, oh, okay. So I actually don't have to be a software engineer anymore. Like I can actually make a career out of this, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah. That's like a very abbreviated version of the story. And there's a lot of more twists and turns there. But yeah.
Your most popular one, I think that most people see is, you know, clueless white guy walks into the restaurant and speaks fluent Chinese.
Nobody into the restaurant. It, you know. Yeah.
Mind blown. Yeah, right?
Right.
What do we think it is about that you think kind of gets people's attention? I know you touched on a little bit.
Yeah.
What do you really think it is?
Well, so I think with the restaurant, I mean, I was very surprised that video got so many. I mean, I think on YouTube right now, it is over 80 million views.
Wow.
Like, I mean, it's like a Mr. Beast video. And I think what happened there was that I think it was just the best distillation. So the first video that I made, like ordering groceries and buying groceries, it was interesting because, you know, like for one, you're watching this American, specifically a white guy, speaking fluent Chinese and doing all these things in Chinese. Like that itself is interesting, right? But I had made many videos prior to that point speaking Chinese, fluent Chinese, and that were not seen by a single American. The video that I made was different because I was interacting with Chinese people speaking their language and they were saying things like, oh, you know, you speak Chinese, and we were having a conversation and they were surprised that I was speaking Chinese, right? So the element of surprise was very interesting. But the restaurant video was something else because what happened with the restaurant video was not only was it me speaking fluent Chinese, like it's a white guy all of a sudden speaking fluent Chinese, which itself is surprising. But beyond that, and it was also Chinese people being surprised that I speak Chinese, which that was another layer. Like, you know, that's also, it's interesting to watch people get surprised when you speak a language, right? It's kind of cool. But the other thing on top of all of that is that it's a very culturally relatable situation for a lot of Americans. There's a Chinese restaurant in every single town in North America. You can go to the smallest. I was just in a tiny town in Saskatchewan, Canada, with probably like 1,000 people or less live there. And there's a Chinese restaurant in that town and also a bar run by Chinese people as well. And so like, it's a universal experience of North Americans and Europeans as well to go into a Chinese restaurant and try to order with people, but in their own language. And sometimes people will wonder, you know, this is kind of how they don't really speak so much English, but like, what if I could speak Chinese, you know? Mm. And so for me to be able to do that, it's almost like a sudden cocktail party superpower. It's like Clark Kent, you know, taking off his glasses and ripping open his shirt. And all of a sudden he's fucking Superman in the Chinese restaurant. You know, I'm like Bruce Lee all of a sudden, just like at the bar. It's like, you know, it's a classic trope in American movies to be at a bar and somebody confronts this incredible martial arts expert, you know, like shoves him or like pours water on his head, but they don't know that he's actually like fucking Jackie Chan, or like Tom Cruise, and all of a sudden, like, boom, you don't want to mess, you're right, don't mess with that. And all he's like, come out, let's come out to the alley, you really want to mess? And like, the guy takes down him and like all his associates, you know? And so for me, it's like that, but in a context that Americans can culturally relate to. Mm. So, and the nail salon video also, which also went incredibly viral, was similar, you know, like every American has had the experience of going into a nail salon and just kind of like wondering, are they gossiping about me, you know, in their like Asian languages? Yeah. And there's a very famous scene from Seinfeld where the Koreans are gossiping about Elaine, you know, as she gets her nails done. And it's like every American girl has had the experience of going into a nail salon and just like wondering, what are they saying about? What are they saying about?
What are they saying? Right. Really? Yeah. Which are some prized moments and memories I have of my time in China. It's moments talking about you and you're sitting right next to him. I'm like, I'm sitting right here, you know, in China's like, exactly. Oh, right. Tell me then a little bit how things kind of evolved. Yeah. I mean, with what you're doing, you know, with these videos, because I know that you're moving beyond Chinese. It looks like you've been learning and trying to and studying some very, sometimes even very obscure languages or very few speakers. Maybe you could talk a bit about that.
I've moved off the mass market track and into the boutique language track. I mean, I guess, look, what happens is I love Chinese and I love learning language. And if it were up to me, really, like, I would spend my life just delving into Chinese poetry. But the reality of the, like, of what I do as a business is that, you know, the first video you make surprising people by speaking Chinese is like, oh my God, that's incredible. You speak such amazing Chinese. The second video is like, whoa, dude, holy shit, you're speaking Chinese again. The third video is like, dude, that's pretty cool. The fourth video is like, yeah, you're speaking Chinese. You know, and the fifth video is like, you know, you're speaking Chinese again. And then the sixth video is like, okay, I've seen that before, right?
We got that long tail, right?
you get returns, right? So this is a problem, right? If you're a full-time content creator, I mean, I kind of set myself up for this because, you know, I quit my stable job as a software engineer to become a YouTuber, right? And my mom was like, what are you doing with your life? You know, and I was very fortunate that my wife supported me throughout this. I'm kidding. And my mom was very supportive the whole time. But I mean, I set myself up for this because, you know, being a YouTuber, it's like being an athlete. Like you can have a great few years, you know, or like an NFL quarterback, like you can have a great few years, but then after your successful run, like all of a sudden you stop being so impressive, you get old.
Yeah, it's like you're only as good as your last game, your last video type of a thing.
Right, so like, you know, the next hotshot guy is going to come up and like be better than you. And you get old and you stop being so good. So like, what are you going to do, right? So you really have to be constantly innovating with what you make. And you have to put yourself in the shoes of the audience and try to think, well, what are people going to want to watch? What can I do that works both with me, with who I am, and that also can get views on the internet, right? Mm-hmm. So after the experience with Chinese, like, and that went super viral, and then I saw this dynamic where like, I need to do something else. Like I can't just keep making videos speaking Chinese. Like it's just boring after a while. I started learning Spanish and I spent 2 months, COVID hit and like the world was shut down and anyway, my videos were getting less views. So I was like, all right, well, might as well do something else. So I spend all this time learning Spanish, 3 months, and, you know, locked in my COVID apartment learning Spanish. Then I start making these videos and they don't get any views. And so I'm like, did I just waste all this time learning Spanish? And I'm actually glad I did it because I did learn a lot of Spanish in that time. But I was thinking to myself, well, I was like, okay, if they're not interested in seeing me speak Spanish, like what might they be interested in seeing? So I kind of started to think like, well, if people like watching me speak Chinese and surprise people by speak Chinese, what other language, like why do I have to just do Chinese? What if I tried to surprise people by speaking an African language? Like I certainly haven't seen any white guys speaking African languages on YouTube before. That sounds kind of cool. There's lots of Africans in New York. Like, let's try it.
Yeah.
I spent 3 weeks learning Wolof, which is the national language of Senegal. Yeah. And then I went to the Malcolm Shabazz West African Market in Harlem. I think it's Malcolm Shabazz. I'm not 100% sure on the name. Mm-hmm. In Harlem. And I went around there speaking Wolof. And then that video I posted, it went super viral. And so I was like, okay, now I get it. There you go. Right.
There you go.
So I have to learn languages that are different, you know? Mm-hmm. Spanish is too mainstream. You know, it's not going to work.
Yeah.
So then I did. Then I started this language world tour. That's at this point, it's taken me to places as far flung as like the Amazon jungle, you know, rural northern Saskatchewan in Canada, Masai Mara in rural Kenya. Went from New York to India for 3 days just to make some videos there. And it's been really cool.
Among those travels and these language experiences, what are some of the most memorable ones that come to mind?
Well, for me, like Native American languages are super cool.
Really?
Yeah. They're the most interesting languages, in my opinion. They're the most difficult, but they're also just languages that really preserve a distinctive format of thought. And so for me, they're fascinating to study. But also like people, I mean, the reason I love learning them so much is like people appreciate you learning them so, so much. Mm. And I get emails all the time from Native American and First Nations tribes, like asking me to come to their villages and learn their languages because their languages are dying.
Yeah.
You know, and even the ones that are relatively healthy, like Navajo, just like the younger generations are speaking them less and less. And it's super sad. And they all want to preserve their cultures, right? Mm-hmm. You know, for me to come there and showcase their language on my YouTube channel, you know, they really appreciate it.
No, that's really neat. Are there any experiences you had regards to those Native American languages you can think of?
Yeah, well, last year I went to the Ecuadorian Amazon jungle to hang out with the Warani, who are an indigenous tribe that was only contacted in the past 50 years by the rest of humanity. And it's like really fascinating because they're one of the few tribes left on the planet that still is a genuine hunter-gatherer tribe. Like, they subsist off of monkeys that they hunt themselves in the jungle with 12-foot-long blowguns that they make themselves and the poison they make themselves. And like Western clothing is a very new introduction for them. And it's a very interesting opportunity to experience like an ancient way of life. And so I went there, I made this video with them and, you know, I learned their language and I, you know, I kept it a secret from them the whole time. But what was so cool to meet them was that the chief afterwards, he comes up to me and says like, hey, like, thanks for coming here and thanks for making this video. And what I really want to say is that I just want these oil guys off our land because what's happening is that the oil people are drilling on their land in the Amazon and it's impinging on their traditional hunting ground. After I made that video and left the jungle, I was very excited to see that a few months later, Ecuadorians actually voted to ban drilling in the Amazon, which was amazing. You know, I thought
that's
it was
amazing.
Super cool. Yeah. I mean, not that I contributed to it. I just think it was cool that happened.
See that happen. Yeah.
Yeah. To see, you know, to see it happen.
I got
to
ask one thing about that experience. I mean, how do you even go about learning their language? I mean, the indigenous tribe, it's probably all localized, that language there. There's not resources and materials. How did you go about doing that?
Yeah, that language was spoken by like 2,000 people in the whole world. So the only way to learn that language was to, you know, find somebody to teach you. But that's honestly, like for me, it wasn't really a big deal because that's how I learn all these languages nowadays. You know, even like mass market languages like Japanese, like what I usually don't use too much study material. Like occasionally I'll reference material and stuff. Usually like I get a tutor and then I just like write everything down in Anki or in Google Docs.
Mm-hmm.
And then I just, you know, review my own material.
I think it's a good question. You know, like realistically, how good is your, you know, language skills? You know, you're not studying years at this point and you don't have all that deeper resources. I'm assuming perhaps, you know, some basic communication or maybe lower conversational, but maybe you could tell me about that.
In the majority of cases, it's like A1 or less.
Mm, okay.
I would say like in most, because I usually only study for like 3 weeks. So
yeah.
It's basic conversation, you know, introducing yourself, like being able to order at a restaurant, talking about what you like, what you don't like, you know, being able to get around in a marketplace, just enough to be able to get myself into trouble.
That's very accurate. Getting yourself into trouble. Yeah. I recognize. Well, tell me, Ari, a little bit what you're doing today, because I know you're also working on a project, you know, with language learning. Maybe you could tell us about that.
Yeah. For the longest time, I was trying to figure out a way to translate my learning method into like into a company, into something that, you know, could teach other people how to learn. You know, when we made language courses that I'm still really proud of, but I wanted a way to be able for people to get speaking practice. But it was really difficult to do that because, you know, like when you tell people the way you actually have to get good at a language is to go and find an expensive language tutor who can sit down with you an hour a day at an inconvenient time in your schedule and time zone, you know, and you're anxious about the whole experience, you know, because you're very stressed out when you have to open your mouth and speak a language to another human being. Like when I tell people that you have to do this to actually get good at a language, they're like, I'd rather use Duolingo, right? So when people ask me like, how do you get good at a language? The answer that they want to hear is different from the answer that they need to hear. So the answer that they want to hear is like Duolingo. The answer that they need to hear is like italki or preply, you know, and like hours and hours of grueling conversation and flashcard reps, you know, with the teacher. And it's expensive and time consuming and inconvenient and anxiety provoking. But when AI came out, we were like, whoa, you know what? This could actually be a way to get speaking practice. And so we came up with a prototype and it was shitty, but we made a YouTube video with it. And we were like, hey, if you guys are interested in this, sign up on this email list. And a bunch of people did, and people were really excited. So we're like, whoa, that's cool. So we polished up the beta a little bit and we sold it to people. And we're like, hey, if you're interested in this and you have said you're interested in this, please buy it. And it's a beta and it's going to suck. But if you buy it, you'll be helping this product and ensuring that we're actually going to go and try to build it. Because software, man, is expensive and it's really complicated. So we have to have confidence that people would actually do it. And so we sold it and a lot of people bought it. Like the beta sold out in like a day. So we're like, holy shit. Okay, there's actually interest here. And so, you know, we hired some programmers and we started to put more time and effort into it. And now like we have thousands of users, like paid subscription users, you know, on this product. You know, it's really exciting. And so we're investing a lot of time and resources into developing this. And we're extremely excited because I really think this can revolutionize language learning in a lot of ways, represents the future of how people will learn languages, including in K-12 schools, by the way, which like for the longest time, I just had dreamt about a way of learning, sitting in a class and watching the teacher drone on for 45 minutes as you sit there learning nothing. Like you can do that. Every American kid has experience of sitting in Spanish class for 8 years. And after that, they come out of that having learned absolutely nothing, you know? And so my dream was always like, hey, get an iPad on the desk of every single kid in that classroom connected with another kid in Guatemala. And that kid in Guatemala is learning English and you're learning Spanish and you do a language exchange in class supervised by the teacher. If you actually did that, you would learn way more Spanish than just listening to your teacher drone on for the entire class. Logistically, it's very difficult to set that up. But now with AI, it's possible, right? Teacher gives a 15-minute lesson and then, hey, you guys all go back to your desks and practice with AI for 15 minutes, supervised by the teacher, and that's your lesson, you know? And they're actually going to be speaking in that way and the AI is speaking back to them. And so it's one-on-one speaking practice, but actually way more convenient and logistically feasible than with a human teacher.
Yeah, I think that the possibilities are really exciting with the technology and where it's going. And yeah, simply, what can be done? What's the future? But not entirely sure, but I definitely think AI is going to be part of it for sure.
Yeah, I think so too. So anybody interested, check out Teacher AI at yourteacher.ai. And that's my plug.
One more time, Teacher AI.
The yourteacher.ai/ShamaNYC for 20% off. It's the YouTube brain of me, man. All these
you need to make that a little more clickbaity. Come on, man.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, all right. Tell us then, what advice would you give to someone who's learning Chinese right now?
My first advice would be to ask, like, do you really want this and how badly do you want it? Because learning a language to a good level is hard and it's going to take you a long, long, long ass time. So the first question you really need to ask yourself is, like, do you want it? And if so, how badly do you want it? If your answer is no, fine. Like, Duolingo, Babbel, like, you do writing characters, you could take a university class, like, great. I mean, there's lots of ways you can learn a little bit just for fun, right? And for the most people, that's fine. Like, you know, I do things all the time that I'm not very good at and that I don't really have a strong desire to improve or get super. Like, CrossFit is a great example. Like, I'm terrible at CrossFit. I'm a really bad exerciser. Like, I'm slow. I'm terrible at it. But I like it. You know, it's a good workout. So it's fine. I'm just very casual about it. That's fine. But if I wanted to become like Matt Frazier, you know, if I wanted to compete in the CrossFit games, like, what I'm doing now would not suffice for that, right? And similarly, like, if you want to get really good at Chinese, Duolingo's not going to cut it, you know? Sorry.
Yeah, yeah, sure.
So you need to speak, and you have to start speaking from day zero. And if you're not speaking from day zero, like, you're not going to learn to speak. Like, it's that simple. You have to do it, and you have to get over your anxiety as soon as possible and just, like, rip the Band-Aid off, you know? So, yeah.
Gotcha. Wow, that's great. Well, that's good advice. So words from a man who knows.
Oh, and also flashcards.
Flashcards, you know, really?
Flashcards, and with the English on the front and the Chinese on the back, Anki, free program. It's great. Just memorize a lot of stuff. I think speaking is more important than memorization. I think the two, because speaking is in some sense natural memorization, because you kind of, the words you need to know come up in naturally in conversation. But memorization and flashcards is an effective aid to what you need to know. Conversation.
That's great. Words from a man who's been through it, right?
Not as much as like Julian Godfrey or like Mark Roswell, but pretty good.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Yes. You got some pretty good stuff out there. Those guys are amazing. All right. So, all right. Where can people find out more about you if they want to see some of your stuff?
There's this cool website called youtube.com. Yeah.
Oh, I think I've heard of that.
You could watch videos from all over the world for free. So on the website, if you search White Guy Speaks Chinese, you'll find my videos. And then also, if you want to find out about Teacher AI, you can go to yourteacherai.ai. Also, we have language courses at streetsmartlanguages.com. And that's about it. Yeah.
All right. Well, we'll put a link in the show notes here to some of your stuff there so people can find out a little bit more about you.
Cool.
So Ari, thanks so much for doing this. It's great to get you on the podcast and to hear your story.
Absolutely. Love your stuff, man.
You have been listening to the You Can Learn Chinese podcast. My name is Jared Turner, co-founder of the Manner Companion Graded Reader Series, and my co-host is John Pazin, co-founder of Manner Companion, founder of All Set Learning, the Chinese Grammar Wiki, and Sinosplice.com. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe. Take a moment to text or message this episode to a friend or share it on social media. It really helps us to reach more people in their language journey. You can leave us a review or reach out to us at mannercompanion.com or find us on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. You can find our Chinese Graded Reader series on Amazon, iBooks, Google Play, or wherever you get your books. Apologies to John Cena, we just ran out of time. The You Can Learn Chinese podcast is produced by myself, Jared Turner, and our editor is Jasper Chua. And a special thanks to our guest, Ari Smith, and of course, thanks to my co-host, the man, the myth, the legend, John Pazin. See you next time.